Broadcasting live from the Gwinnett studio of Business Radio X, located inside Office Suites Plus at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies that do business in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm your host, Mike Salmon, alongside my co-host. He's back in the saddle today, Stephen Julian.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good, Stephen. We missed you last week.
I missed you guys, too. There was a hole in my life last week, and it was the fact that I wasn't here.
I hate to admit how much I missed you. It's kind of sickening. So
can you say it like publicly? Make sure to get it on the record.
I just did twice. Which is twice more than I would have liked. Hey, we've got a full studio today. Joining us today on the show is Tom Leatherberry with Leatherberry Associates, Brandy Melton and Emily Eukers with Sage Sales Logics, Jim Hall with Triatech, and Dustin Bixby with the Gwinnett Gladiators hockey team. And we will start with our friend Tom Leatherberry with Leatherberry Associates. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Tom, tell us all about Leatherberry Associates and what you do.
Leatherberry Associates is a software reseller and consulting firm. We sell and implement both customer relationship management software solutions as well as workflow automation software solutions.
What is workflow automation?
So workflow automation is a sequential order of tasks, events, and worker processes where we automate those tasks. We take a look at a workflow process that perhaps might be costing a company too much time, too much money, and we look at a way to automate that. So it's usually a software-based solution that's going to fire off of some type of an event. It could be a date event. It could be a data change to a data record. And then the process is kicked off.
Talk about why this would be necessary for a business.
So workflow automation is very important to businesses today because we are completely overburdened. We have staff members who are coming in. They're working 12, 14 hours a day. I personally am working 18 hours a day. We're overworked. Our job responsibilities, we're ending up having to do more for less. And so workflow automation actually allows us to step in and regulate and automate a number of tasks that people don't normally have to do. Or let me rephrase that. It would allow us to eliminate a lot of tasks such as manual data entry, such as integration with our website for lead processing, distribution of reporting, electronic data integration between our accounting system and our CRM system.
Tom, I would imagine there are some businesses that actually are seeking you out. Hey, I really need help with workflow automation. I would imagine there are also some businesses, some here in Gwinnett County even, that don't realize they need workflow automation. What are some of those businesses that you can think of that you would say, man, I wish you guys would call me, or you really do need to call me. Here's some ways I can really help you.
The spectrum of prospective clients is incredibly large. It can be a very small business to large. We have companies 3, 4, 5 employees all the way up to hundreds of employees with offices across the globe. How do they find out about workflow automation? We are beginning a series. It's an educational series, continuing education series on workflow automation that we're hosting on a monthly basis. We're doing a workflow automation and CRM this month. Next month will be marketing automation. We're going to get into accounting integration the month after that. And so essentially, if you have data and you have people who are spending an exorbitant amount of time entering data, as one example, you need workflow automation.
Does it reduce the number of employees a company may hire or have on staff?
It does not reduce the number of employees. It's not designed to eliminate somebody's task.
Just make it more efficient.
Absolutely. More efficient, reduce the fiscal costs, let people do the job that they're hired to do, and still get home in time to have dinner and see the kids.
It sounds like in that way then, Tom, I mean, it really can help save some dollars for companies in the long run.
Tens of thousands of dollars and more.
So if a business owner comes to you, hey, I need to talk about this workflow automation, where do you start? What's the start of the conversation?
There's many starting points, but
give us a good one.
So ultimately, what we like to do is we like to sit down and identify the typical, you know, the top 10 list. You know, what are the top 10 pains that you're experiencing? Is it in your web integration? Is it your accounting integration? Is it the fact that you have people who aren't receiving their sales leads in a timely manner? Once we've identified the top 10 list, then what we go through is a time in motion. And time in motion is really sitting there with a stopwatch, and we record the amount of time that somebody goes through their task. And so we can actually put a physical dollar amount or an actual dollar amount to the task that's being conducted. And that's how you can calculate your return on your investment. Am I going to make my money back in 3 months, 6 months? Am I going to make it back in 3 years?
See, Stephen is here to stump our guest with those tough questions.
I thought it was a nice softball. He answered it very, very well. Actually, what I like was the answer. There were so many ways he can help. He had to kind of pick one or two. So there was a lot of places to start. I like that.
Tom, there's a great story about how your company, Leatherberry Associates, ended up here in the Atlanta area. Share that story with us.
You mean the one where I spun a pencil on a map?
That's the story.
So 12 years ago, I was out in Los Angeles working for a consulting firm, and I decided that it was time to make a change in my life. So I literally sent an email out to the industry, and I asked people to respond if they were interested in retaining my services, and I received 11 job offers. And of those 11, two were in California, so I took them off the map. I put pins in the other cities, and I spun the pencil. And I said, wherever it lands, that's where I'm going to go. And it landed on Des Moines, Iowa. So I spun again. Second spin was Boston, and I opted to move to Boston. And my fiance at the time said, it's too cold. I'm not going to Boston. So I spun again. And here we are in Atlanta. It's been 11 great years. We've got a great client base that we have established across the country. And we are now focused on Gwinnett County and bringing all the education that we have acquired over the course of the last 11 years here to Gwinnett County. We're really trying to help and focus on Gwinnett County-based businesses and help them grow and to be able to expand outside the borders of the state of Georgia.
We're talking with Tom Leatherberry. He's the CEO of Leatherberry Associates. Tom, where do you see your company in 5 years from now? Where do you see maybe the most growth?
Workflow automation is absolutely the biggest and greatest offering that we can provide to an organization. Followed behind that is CRM. Those are the two, customer relationship management. Those are the two primary areas that companies have to excel. 5 years' time, we are going to be back to our full capacity of 17 on staff, bi-coastal offices here in Atlanta and San Francisco area.
All right. For those that want to know more about your company, more about CRM and CRM products, where should they go?
Our website is the best place. It's www.leatherberry.net. And if you click on the events calendar, you'll be able to see the upcoming events that we'll be hosting for the Lunch and Learns, the free Lunch and Learns. And you'll be able to sit down for about an hour and learn all that there is to know about workflow automation and how it can benefit your company.
And I'll be attending some of that this afternoon as well.
Oh, fantastic.
I'll actually get to know as much as you since you're the Georgia Tech guy here in the room.
Yeah, but I wasn't invited. But I guess it's an open invitation, right, Tom?
We would love to have you.
I can't make today's, but I will definitely be there.
You'll be there next month.
I like that.
Tom, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. We move on now. Our next guest here on Gwinnett Business Radio from Sage Sales Logics, Brandy Melton, who is the regional sales manager, and Emily Eukers, who's the senior sales engineer. Both of you just in town from is it Arizona, from Phoenix?
Correct. Yeah. Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, welcome to Gwinnett County and welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Tell us all about Sage Sales Logics, whatever you want to share about the company and what you do.
Sales Logics is a product, of course, that you can use for a CRM tool that Tom Leatherberry just mentioned. It kind of gives you that option.
And he mentioned customer relationship management, CRM. Why is that important to business?
Well, customers are the lifeblood of any business. So a true CRM will give you that option where you can now track your customer's progress and follow up with them, give you all those flexibilities, so that way you can stay on top of them and build those lasting long relationships.
Rather than when some people talk about CRM, obviously we want you guys to talk about the benefits of your products. What are some of the mistakes people make with CRM that get them into trouble?
one of the mistakes I think they make out of the starting gate is expecting it to do too much too quickly. I often say that, you know, spend the first 90 days using the product very simply, almost out of the box. Get your people to use it and adopt it and put data in it. And then we'll start talking about phasing in customizations and integration to other systems. If you try to do it all out of the starting gate, salespeople have short attention spans. They're not going to put anything in there that they don't want to.
Salespeople, children, we could go down the list. Mm-hmm. So,
we're talking with Brandy and Emily with Sage Sales Logix. What's the difference between CRM, customer relationship management, and contact management?
Yeah, that comes up a lot. Sage also owns ACT, and Sales Logix is the big brother or the more advanced solution built by the same makers of ACT. A contact management solution is good for often small businesses or larger businesses that do what we call B2C or direct to consumer. They deal with an individual person. Great example of that is real estate agents. You know, they deal with people, not necessarily companies. And another example would be contact management when you want a local database. And you're going to take those relationships with you when you go from brokerage to brokerage. CRM is for the company, more of a mid-market solution, or even a smaller business that wants a centralized database. Everybody shares the records. We also have more advanced marketing capabilities, lead generation capabilities. And SalesLogix has a 90% open platform, so you could argue that it's got incredible integration capability as well.
The CRM market, I'm sure, is very crowded, very competitive. What makes Sage Sales Logix, what differentiates you, your product from the rest? Easy for me to say, Stephen. I should let you ask that question. By the way, you know,
I will. How does Sales Logix differentiate itself from the many competitors out there? How is that, Mike?
That's why you're here.
All right, go for it.
That's a great question. Actually, there's a couple key things that we feel that Sales Logix is a strong competitor in this marketplace. One is the surpassed or unsurpassed usability. So the high adoption to the software, it's easy to use, not a lot of windows or tabs to click in. Another one is our flexibility in our pricing and also our deployment options. We offer multiple deployment options, one being a cloud-hosted solution, more of that turnkey solution up in our cloud where we manage your data for you. Everything's included from the software, the support, the licenses. Then we also offer on-premise solutions. So companies that still want to manage it themselves on their own servers within their own infrastructure, they can do that. We also offer multiple license types. So there's different types of users. We label them as a named user, someone who's in the system often, always need access anywhere, anytime. We also have concurrent licenses, so more like a shared license. And we also have the web viewer for people who just need to have access to like a read-only capability. So we offer those types of flexibility with our software. And the last one would probably be our best-in-class, our mobile solution. It's number one within the industry today. It's included in our product, and we own it.
I was going to ask you about the mobile thing, because everybody's walking around with their iPhone and so forth, and it seems like you're a leader in that category, or at least in that area.
Absolutely. It's really one of the biggest driving forces. I'd say it's one of the top two driving forces in CRM decisions today. More and more people are sending their sales and service technicians into the field, and they're not giving them a laptop. A laptop is at least $1,000, and the typical salesperson maybe uses less than 10% of its functionality. So the mobile solution that we offer comes with our product. It's built on HTML5, and that means that it's part of our architecture. It's free. So if there's any extensibility that you want to do, custom field or even a workflow process that Tom had spoken to earlier, we can kick that off in mobile because it's part of our architecture.
So one of the questions we like to ask on this show is kind of, who is your product best suited for? What type of business owners need to call you? What I'm hearing is, if you have customers or if you have contacts, it's not use our product, it's we've got a product for you, and we're going to help you find the best solution.
Absolutely. I mean, we have certain vertical markets that we have strength in, but everybody needs CRM.
And that's a great question, Steve, because that's where we actually kind of differentiate between the other competitors as well, is that we're not that cookie cutter CRM where you have to kind of fit your business into our product. We have that flexibility and those multiple options for you.
So as a follow-up, let me ask this. You guys obviously have the tools in the tool belt. So as business owners come to you or as business owners contact you, talk a little bit about how you're going to help guide them to the right product.
Well, basically how we start off is that we usually do an in-depth discussion with them and understand their business pains that Tom Leatherberry had mentioned. And then, of course, Sage Sales Logics, we are the developers. So we actually train and certify local business partners on a global scale and in local areas like Leatherberry and Associates, who are the true experts on our product. They're the ones that meet with the customers on a daily basis. They're doing the implementing, the customizing, and the training. So we kind of have a team that kind of set up for success, and we try to leverage them as internal resources as well as our external resources to make sure that it's successful on all ends. And the key thing is that our relationship with our partners and with our customers is almost so closely connected that they're comfortable calling either one at any given time for any moment, and that's the difference between us.
I'd like to bring Tom back into the conversation real quick because, Brandy mentioned the relationship with the companies like Leatherberry Associates. How does that relationship work? What is your relationship with Sage?
This has been a long-standing relationship from my vantage point. I've actually been representing Sage Software since 1997, so 16 years now that we've been a business partner, certified business partner. Not certifiable, but certified. And the way the relationship works is, we purchase the software from them. We receive from them complete support, technical support, training support, any kind of developmental support that we need in order for us to become certified. And then we take all that knowledge and disseminate it to our customers, our client base. We are also utilized as a feedback forum. So we provide Sage with a lot of feedback on what's good, what's not good in the product. And we've hammered on them very hard in years, and they've improved. And they have, they're not the largest mid-market CRM software solution or CRM software solution for a reason.
So is it safe to say you're kind of on the front line then?
We are the infantry, yes.
Well, I like the concept of partnership. And the other thing, I'm going to ask Tom a very hard-hitting follow-up question to that, too. I'm assuming when you started the relationship with Sage, there was no spinning of pencils involved with that relationship, correct?
No.
And especially as you've built, obviously they deliver to your clients, and that's why you continue to use them.
Well, to be perfectly honest and candid, we've represented a number of CRMs over the years, and Sage has been a product that we've never not represented. And the reason why I've always stayed with Sage is because of that customization capability that Emily's speaking about earlier. I mean, there's not a business process that we have not been able to put into the product that has not met the needs and specific needs of a client.
All right, back to Emily and Brandy real quick. As far as Sage Sales Logics, how are most customers deploying Sales Logics, on-premises or within the cloud?
Great question. Right now we're seeing more and more cloud-hosted solutions kind of starting straight out. The reason why it's more that turnkey solution, not a lot of capital invested up front. They're able to start the first year out up in our cloud. And the nice flexible thing about Sales Logics is after they spend a year and they realize that this is the product that's going to suit their business needs, not just for today and their immediate pains, but it's going to allow them to grow. And as their company changes, the product will allow them those kind of flexibility. So they also have the option at that time, if they want to move their business in-house and purchase on-premise, they can do that at any time as well. But the cloud-hosted solution is probably right now what people are more leaning towards as an entry.
Brandy, a follow-up question for you. Emily, you had talked a little bit about when people get started, use it out of the box, get some data in there, just kind of do the basic things. What are some of the... Let me give you the chance to kind of expand on that a little bit. And what are some of the things that people can expect Sales Logics to help them with? Put some meat on the bones, put some skin on it. Tell us what I can expect when I actually do the 90 days and mm-hmm. put the stuff in. And then how can I use it, and what can I expect the outcomes to be for my business?
Well, so you'd have one centralized repository for all of your customer information. And let's even expand that beyond customers, prospects, vendors, everybody I have a relationship with. I should have a chronological history of everything I've ever talked to them about, whether it's an email, a meeting, a phone call. So you can expect to find that if it's not in Sales Logics, it didn't happen. And that's a lot of the mentality that the management team and the decision makers that implement it start to have with their staff, is if it's not in Sales Logics, then it didn't happen. And that's what we often hear. I think after the 90 days, to get the return on investment that you should, because CRM should pay for itself if implemented properly. Start from the end result and work backward. What are the reports and the analytics? What is it that we want to learn about our business? Then we can use that knowledge to grow our business and improve our processes. So kind of start with what you expect at the end, and then use the business intelligence, our advanced analytics and dashboards, reporting capability, process automation. All of that helps you get, you know, overall the return on investment.
You've both provided some great information. What is your top advice for businesses considering CRM?
You want me to take that one? You know, go with a system that is going to help you improve your business and your business process. Don't implement a system that's going to make you or force you to change the way you do business already. So sometimes with a lot of CRMs that aren't customizable, you get locked into their process and their customization, and then you're not doing business the way you know best. And then also make it easy, make it simple. You know, keep it simple, stupid, I think is the most commonly
used. She looked at me when she said that, Mike. I'm a little concerned.
I'm not sure why she didn't look at me, but I hear you.
You know, if they're not going to use it, you know, and if it's not easy, even if you have to dumb it down and remove screens and fields, which is certainly possible, then they're not going to live in it. And that's what you want to do. And then finally, the mobile. Mobile is just so important in today's world. I wake up, I grab my iPhone, and I'm already in the system on a daily basis checking my calendar.
You know, if I can expand on that just a little bit as well. What you really want to looking for is something that's completely customizable that can expand and grow and shift with your company. So if in 6 months or 6 years your business changes the direction it's going, your CRM needs to be flexible enough to make that change as well.
You guys should work with this guy over here. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
It's great to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Tom. Oh,
thank you very much.
See, we made some introductions here. No, they already knew each other. For folks, you've given some great advice. You've talked about your products, which are wonderful. For folks that want to know more about the products with Sage, and of course, I can go to Leatherberry Associates and find out more through Tom. But you guys, I assume, have a website where we can find out more about what you do and the products you offer.
Yep, SageSalesLogics.com.
And real quick, to get on a little personal note, tell us about how you got involved with Sage. Because, by the way, you don't know this, Stephen, but my cousin works at Sage right down the road.
Really?
He's been there for many, many years.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I have an inside.
I have some clients who work at Sage. It's like they're a great company.
They're everywhere.
They're
everywhere.
Fantastic. Yeah, let's find out how they got there.
But, Emily, tell us how you got involved with Sage.
It was a friend referral. I had bounced around with a couple of really small software companies in the Phoenix area. And at the time, it was Acton SalesLogics as a private company. I was brought in as a consultant. I guess they really liked me. They made a job offer, and it's been 12 years. So,
I hope they liked you. If they didn't like you, made you the sales offer, that wouldn't be good. Brandy, your story?
A couple years ago, actually, I was interested in the technology industry, and I similar scenario, I guess. I kind of knew someone within the company that kind of led me down the path and was able to make them an offer.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting both of you today. Thank you so much for your time, Brandy Melton and Emily Eukers with Sage Sales Logics. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Joining us now on Gwinnett Business Radio is Jim Hall. Jim is with Triatech. He's the CEO. Jim, welcome to the program. Tell us all about Triatech. What does your company do?
Great to be here, Mike. Thanks for having me. Triatech is a company that designs and manufactures systems that control the directional flow of air, which sounds like a kind of an esoteric concept, like what is that? But we basically answer the question, what happens when the door opens? If you picture a situation like an isolation room in a hospital where you've got a patient in there with an infectious disease, when the door opens, it's critical to know which way the air is flowing. You do not want air coming out of that room. So our systems are designed to create a differential pressure between the critical environment and the adjoining space, and we manage and make sure the air flows the direction that you would like.
I understand, Jim, that you're an international company. Are there challenges when you're selling internationally?
It's been a lot of fun. We've been very successful, and anywhere between a third to half our sales have been international. Whereas the technology is somewhat established here in the United States, it's very new internationally. And so we've had some fun traveling around, particularly in the Middle East, with our products and demoing them and educating consumers. I'll give you a quick story. We went over to Saudi Arabia and to Egypt probably about 6 months before the Arab Spring happened, and we're traveling through the Middle East. Our products are monitors that mount on the wall, and we also make a mechanical device that mounts into the ceiling, into the ductwork. And it's an aluminum tube probably about 2 feet long, shaped like an hourglass, and attached with a whole bunch of electronics and devices that make the device work. So we've got a hard shell case, and we're traveling through Egypt, through the airport, carrying this device when we were stopped, as you might imagine. And we're talking with security folks who English is not their first language, and Arabic is not mine either. We're trying to explain to them what this device does. And can you kind of picture what they're thinking it is?
Right.
Oh, yeah. like a rocket launcher. Right. It really looks like a rocket launcher. And I'm trying to point to the ceiling and move my hands around, realizing that that's not working either.
Moving your hands around in big gestures
pointing
probably
to the ceiling,
didn't
big gestures,
help.
No. So that got at least some security people to come over who spoke English. And the interesting part about it was we were in Egypt, and we explained what it was, and they said, well, where are you going? And we said, well, we're going to Beirut. And they said, all right, fine, just go. No worries. But so, yeah, we had some challenges traveling internationally with the systems, but it was fun.
Who are your customers? What type of customers do you serve?
We really focus in two main vertical areas. Mentioned isolation rooms. So hospitals are a big end-user customer for us. But we sell primarily to the large controls contractors, Johnson Controls, Honeywell, Siemens. Those are the folks that are basically making the building automation systems that run these situations. Isolation rooms are one. The opposite of that would be an operation room where you want positive pressure. You want air coming in that room and flowing out. So that's about half of our business. The second application would be in laboratories, university laboratories and pharmaceutical companies that have fume hoods where you open up the sash of your fume hood, you put your experiment in, you close the sash, and then poof. When you open that sash, you want to make sure that the air is flowing away from the operator, which is the whole reason why you have a fume hood. So fume hood controls for universities would be our second largest. We do also have a small business that we do lighting controls. So our lighting controls operate the Georgia Dome, for example, Comiskey Park, things like that.
Wow, interesting. We're talking with Jim Hall, the CEO with Triotech. There's an interesting backstory with this company. You actually bought this company out of bankruptcy at an auction. Talk about that.
So oftentimes you hear the expression, the best time to start a business is in a recession. We took that one step further and bought a business that actually failed and went into bankruptcy. Triotech is about a 30-year-old company, has great technology. The previous ownership, while they were growing the company, ran into cash flow problems, and one of the ways they tried to solve that was by not paying their taxes. So they basically brought the IRS on as a partner, and they're not interested in being a partner. So they forced the company into a Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization that eventually converted into a Chapter 7. And for those who don't know the difference, essentially Chapter 7, you're supposed to close the doors, liquidate the operation, pay off all the creditors to the best of your ability, and move on. We actually were able to survive the business while it was in Chapter 7. We got a special court approval to allow it to continue to operate in Chapter 7, then went to the bankruptcy auction, got it out, survived it, and that was in 2008. So I have yet to find, and I've tried, another example of any company anywhere that actually survived and emerged out of a Chapter 7 bankruptcy liquidation.
Wow. What are some of the challenges? I mean, you take a company that's bankrupt, I mean, it's got an image now and a brand that people think is no longer around, and here you are coming back. I mean, you must have had your hands full of challenges.
There were quite a few, but underneath it, you know, I talk about the business had good bones, right? So the structure underneath it was actually very solid, and some of the strengths that the company had were the people who were committed to the organization. We had a great group of employees, and it was a very, very difficult situation for those people, but they were hanging in there. Secondly, we were in a niche business with a specialized product that didn't have a lot of competition. So our customers were basically saying, hey, we need you to survive. We want you out there. And so we saw where the strengths were and then also where some of the weaknesses were. One of the other strengths, since we're in this discussion here, is it had a fully functioning ERP system from Sage. And we were able to actually keep the whole process integrated that way. So that was kind of a key thing that we already had that investment made. But I think the thing you realize in this type of situation is that as much thought as you put into it, no plan ever survives its collision with reality. And there's always going to be something that you can't deal with, you don't even know or understand is going to happen. And so you've got to have the right people in place and be able to solicit from them their ideas and their strengths to overcome things that you don't even see are going to happen. And because I think we had a great team of folks there who were committed to seeing this thing through and stuck with it, that was a key to surviving the business. It wasn't just the assets that we bought. That was the easy part. It was the people that came with it that made the company strong.
So, Jim, you survived the Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Obviously, Triatech is in a lot better position now than they were a few years ago. Where do you see yourself going in the next 5 years? And kind of as a little side note to that question, are there any other markets that you kind of see opening up that could use some of the products you talk about?
Absolutely. And I think for myself, I looked at this like I couldn't possibly make it any worse, right? So the only place we could go is...
No, I could, but, you know.
It had already hit bottom. And so we could only make it better from there. And so, it's been 4 years. Within the first 18 months, we tripled in size. We were selling internationally. There's obviously a lot of opportunity for us internationally. But there's a lot of emphasis on not only energy savings and green. We have a lot to do with making sure that things run efficiently and reducing energy. But clearly, healthcare is an area that's continuing to grow. So as hospitals continue to grow and expand, we've got a lot of opportunity in the hospital marketplace. And universities are continuing to fill their roles, and they're looking to attract top students and top educators to their facilities. So universities are investing in new facilities and updating their opportunities in their schools. So for us, the marketplace is continuing to be very huge. You can also imagine when we were in bankruptcy, our market share went to pretty close to nothing in the lab business. And we compete against somebody who's got majority market share. So in 5 years, we expect to be 3 to 4 times the size we are right now.
You talked about some of the challenges when you're trying to pull a company out of bankruptcy, and you knew there were going to be a lot of challenges, and you mentioned sometimes your plan, it hits reality, and there's things you didn't expect. Was there any specific things that that happened that you're like, oh my goodness, didn't see that coming?
Absolutely. There's plenty of them. I think one of the ones that I probably underestimated the most was relationships with our suppliers and our vendors, which had been damaged through this whole thing, and making sure that we were able to repair those. I underestimated what was involved in doing that. But the thing that I learned in that process, we were somewhat fortunate because in the recession, all our suppliers needed customers as well. And the fact that I had some cash and was ready to pay for supplies was a real benefit. But once we started to restore those relationships and talked to them a little bit about what we needed and expected, we found that our vendors were actually great partners and could bring their expertise about how they ran their business to help us run ours better. So at the end of the day, what turned into a bigger problem actually resulted in us getting a lot farther ahead once we used them and took advantage of what their knowledge and expertise was.
We're talking with Jim Hall from Triatech. Jim, whenever we've had guests on that do a very special niche type business, one of the questions I enjoy asking is, do you have any stories of a very unique situation of one of your systems that you put in? Or you might even just talk about some of the statistics or some of the things that go into your niche business. For example, trying to keep certain air out or trying to bring certain air in, things that we would never even think about when we open or close a door. What are some cool stories of a system you put in or things we wouldn't think about when it comes to air control?
So clearly it's something that most people take for granted. I don't think anybody thinks about it when they walk into an operating room or to an isolation room, or when you figure right down the street from us here in Atlanta is a place like the CDC. And so we've got our systems in the CDC, which is obviously dealing with some things that you really do not want to get out into the environment. So we're best off when nobody knows about us. If somebody knows about us, it's typically because it's a problem and something failed.
It's kind of like a referee in a football game, right, or in a hockey game or something, you know?
If no one notices Triatech, things are good.
You're doing a good job.
Probably one of the neatest projects we've done is that system over in Saudi Arabia, where they're building an entire medical infrastructure from the ground up in 3 different cities. So we put a system into essentially undergraduate teaching institutions, postgraduate teaching institutions, medical colleges, and brand new hospital systems, including cardiac and GYN care, nursing facilities, and pharma, all being built at the same time in 3 different cities all at once. And the whole system is integrated and communicates at one central point. It was just massive.
Jim, you talk about Triatech and the airflow and everything. Did you have a background in this at all before you purchased the company and brought it out of bankruptcy? Or did you just spin a pencil like Tom Leatherberry over here and, hey, that's the company we're going to bid on?
Well, it was only slightly more sophisticated than spinning a pencil.
Okay.
It was a laser pointer.
It was a laser pointer. In all fairness, I barely understand how our systems work. But what I knew was a little bit about the market. I had some great partners that had identified this business. And in sitting down with the people who were still invested in it and worked there, realized that we had people who really could do a great job with this business if they were given a fair chance at success. And I had customers that, you know, I did a fair amount of due diligence and talked with our customers, our representatives who were out in selling the products and heard how much they really needed our products to be successful. And so I figured I knew enough about running the business that I could do it if I had the right people around me, and that was the key to making it successful.
What kind of advice would you give to another business person, an entrepreneur perhaps, that that's looking at maybe, you know, trying to resurrect a company out of bankruptcy? Would you tell them, turn and run the other way as fast as you can? Or what kind of advice would you give them?
You know, I think it's not for the faint of heart, and it's going to take more money and more time than you ever figured it's going to. The whole concept of no plan survives its collision with reality is a fundamental theme for me, in that you've got to be able to react to circumstances on a change. You've got to trust your instincts. But at the best question I ever learned a long time ago is asking somebody, what would you recommend? And when people came to me with problems, the first question I would ask them is, well, what would you recommend we do? And if you start giving your people that expectation, they come with better ideas than you would come up with. The problems don't always just become yours. And at the end of the day, they felt better about bringing those solutions and making them work. And that would be probably the best advice I would give anybody running any business is, you know, put better people than yourself around you, trust them to do their jobs, and lean on them for their recommendations.
All right, we're talking with Jim Hall, the CEO of Triotech. Sounds like a great company and obviously a great backstory. Jim, for those that want to find out more about your company, where should they go?
www.triotech.com, T-R-I-A-T-E-K.com.
Jim, thank you so much for your time.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, our next guest here on Gwinnett Business Radio from the Gwinnett Gladiators hockey team, it is Dustin Bixby. Dustin, good morning. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us all about the Gladiators. You know, Steven and I, we're big sports fans. We're familiar with you, but anyone that's not familiar with the Gladiators, who are you and what do you guys do?
We're going to turn this into a sports talk show right now.
Yeah, we're kind of changing gears right now.
I'll hang up and listen, Dustin.
There you go. No, actually, you know, the Gladiators are the ECHL affiliate. Ironically, we have Sage here from Scottsdale of the Phoenix Coyotes, so they're probably familiar with our parent club. But we're the ECHL affiliate of the Phoenix Coyotes, and we've been playing hockey up at the Gwinnett Arena for 10 seasons. You know, it's just a great family opportunity to come out and have a good time. It's also great for businesses to utilize the Gladiators for their needs to try and help them grow their business. And that's really what we're here to try and do, is help businesses find solutions. And, you know, you may be sitting here going, I'll hang up and listen. But really, it's a lot more than, you know, getting into the nuts and bolts. And you really don't even have to be a hockey fan to utilize the Gladiators for your business. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of people don't realize, that you can use the team to your advantage. You know, they think, I'm not a hockey fan. I have no desire to go see a hockey game. That's some Yankee northern sport. And, you know, those people go skating around the ice and, you know, it makes no sense to me. Well, it doesn't really need to make sense for you to go and have a good time and have fun and build your client relationships with the people that you're trying to get their business. I mean, it gives you an opportunity to have 2 hours of entertainment, 2 hours of an opportunity to sit there and cement that relationship. And at the end of it, as you were talking about earlier, Mike, you know, you want them to be your friend. And after 2 hours at a hockey game, you sort of build that relationship and give you that opportunity to go out and say, you know, hey, how about taking a look at my product? You've sat there for 2 hours with them. You know, it's a great chance to sit there and say, yeah, okay, I'll take a look at that.
So, Dustin, I'm going to give you the easiest question in the history of mankind. Apart from the tickets and going to the game, what other ways can the Gwinnett Gladiators help business owners do more business?
You know, I think that's part of the way, as you said, buying tickets and going to the games. And I think, you know, there's many ways that people can use tickets. And a lot of people hear tickets and think, I'm not a hockey fan. I don't want to go to a game. I don't need tickets. I don't want tickets. And I think that's, you know, sometimes a little bit of a quick way to get you out of the door. But I mean, there's so many different ways that you can utilize tickets, and I'll get to the other ways as well. But just the fact that, you know, you can use those as rewards for employees. You may not like hockey, but your employees may. And a lot of times we hear a lot of people saying, hey, we get gift cards, or I give my employees this, that, or the other. Well, a lot of times they're not going to be thinking about you after they filled up their car with gas 5 minutes later. I mean, that's right out the window. You know, the next thing, you know, what you want to do is have that employee remember the great time they had at the game. Mm-hmm. Remember that, hey, I've been here. You know, they keep thinking about how they had fun last Friday night when they're sitting there on the line or doing whatever it is that they do, and they're bored out of their mind or whatever it is that they do, that you know, it just builds that good feeling towards, hey, I did this great job, and now the boss has been rewarding me. It's also great to give to your clients. You know, give your clients, your best folks, here's two tickets. They're going to have that same feeling of appreciation from giving tickets away. The other thing that we have an advantage, I think, over some other businesses is the fact that we interact with the public on a regular basis, so we have the ability to try and help you market your business, what you're doing, to all the people that come in to the arena at Gwinnett Center. It's a beautiful facility up on Sugarloaf Parkway, and getting you the opportunity to get in front of all those fans that come through the door, give you the opportunity to put your message out there, and that's what we pride ourselves in, being able to help people get their message out and let people know what they do at our games in a fun way. People come to a hockey game, they're there having fun, and it may not be the exact reason why they may end up coming to pick your product over somebody else's. But, you know, from what we've seen, it definitely helps, because people now have that good feeling of, oh, yeah, I saw them with the Gladiators. So when they're looking through the phone book or they end up, you know, seeing it on a website or something, it triggers in their head that they know that, oh, those guys support the hockey team. I go there all the time. They've got to be, you know, a good business to choose or use. And so, you know, we get people that see that ability, and you know, they utilize that for their business by being a sponsor of the team and getting their message out there. So those are, you know, two of the big ways that I think you can definitely use the team. And I don't think I've really said anything about how the team's doing in the standings in the past 3 minutes. And
well, we're business to business here, so
exactly.
We're going to talk about the business side,
yep,
which, you know, because exactly. we could talk hockey all day and what's
sure.
happening on the ice. By the way, the Gladiators are a first place team.
Absolutely.
But you talk about, you know, businesses supporting sports teams and hockey specifically. Sports marketing is a billion-dollar business for a reason, because sports fans are loyal, and I do know, much like NASCAR fans, hockey fans are very loyal to their team. They're very loyal to the sponsors as well. Talk about the fans that do come through the gates. Who would these businesses be reaching? What are your demos? Because it's not really the good old boy who's just there to see the fights. It's a pretty well-educated crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. And our demo, in terms of the breakdown of male to female, is very similar to a NASCAR crowd. Our demo is almost 50-50, and we get a lot of, especially at our games being the minor league, we don't get as many. We do get some diehard sports fans, but our demo is more families. So you're going to get mom, dad. You're going to get the business decision maker who's coming with mom to the game. And so you've got that, and I say business decision maker, really you've got mom who's making the decision if you're some kind of...
Amen.
Yeah, you've got mom who's making the decision sometimes. But you do have the, you know, if you're advertising for a business, mom's bringing dad along. Dad's going with the kids. So dad's there seeing the message that you're sending in terms of your business, trying to get a hold of them. You know, most of our fans are upper middle class. They make over $75,000 a year. So you've got people that have some disposable income that can come to a game and say, yeah, hey, we're going to go out after the game. We're going to go eat somewhere. That looks like a great product. Let me try it. And I think the Gwinnett Center, in our situation, it may not be the same in a lot of other situations. The way that the Gwinnett Center is set up, with everybody parking free and coming in and out the main doors, it makes it fantastic, because we have the ability to put businesses right there in front as you come in the main entrance to showcase their business at our games. It gives you that ability as you come in to see all these people. Because everybody comes and goes through the front doors, they've almost basically got to walk right by you. So it's not as if we're sticking people around the backside of the facility. So, you know, we get that upper middle class. We get those mix 50-50. Yeah, we do have some kids, but those kids bring along mom and dad, who are the people that are the business owners and, you know, those people that are making those decisions on the products that, you know, you see advertised at the game.
We're talking with Dustin Bixby with the Gwinnett Gladiators hockey team. For those business owners that are listening right now live, or listening later on to our show on the podcast or on delay, what would you say to them that say, well, I'm just a small business owner, I'm a medium business owner, I can't afford to be a sponsor of a professional sports team? And by the way, with the Atlanta Thrashers gone, you are now the only hockey game in town. But what would you say to that business owner?
I think people have a little bit of a misconception when they hear sports marketing, especially with us at a minor league level. And as you said, Mike, we're the only hockey team in town. There are still hockey fans in the city. We see them all the time at our games. You see them coming in their Thrashers gear to our games, and we love it. We love having them come to our games and have a good time that they used to have downtown. But because we're a minor league team, we are in a major league market. We still draw 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 fans a game, which is a pretty large number. And I know that there were some weekends when Atlanta, the Thrashers, were still here playing and we were here playing. You know, they would have a sellout crowd of 17,000, and we would have, you know, 10,000 in the building on the same night. So there are those hockey fans in this city. It's tapping into those people and getting them to come out. But as a minor league team, our budgets are not the same. We're not talking, you know, $14 billion or whatever it is to build the Yankee Stadium and be the naming rights sponsor. I mean, we do things on a much smaller scale in terms of price, just because our budget is a lot smaller. Our ticket prices start from $10 to $30. I think your lowest Thrashers ticket was $30. So, you know, we're $10 to $30, and that's what our range is if you want tickets. And, you know, we can do something that gets you set up, you know, $100, $200, $300, get you some tickets, get you the opportunity to help take care of those clients, business owners, you know, those people that you work with. And we do sponsorship packages that get people involved all the way from, you know, a very low number to if you want to be, you know, a marquee sponsor. But, you know, we really try to make something that's going to fit your business. We don't want you to come in and just say, just give us your money and walk away. We want to help you achieve the goals that you're after, especially marketing-wise, with our sponsorship package. It doesn't do us any good if you're not getting the results that you're looking for. And that's sort of what we pride ourselves on, is finding, you know, what you're trying to do and set something up that's going to be successful for you. And we have no problem, because we're minor league, thinking outside the box and doing something a little bit unique. You know, you may have seen something at another minor league venue somewhere, and may have heard about a promotion that, you know, we're willing to try it and have some fun with it.
I think, Dustin, also, a lot of people, when they think of marketing with sports teams, they think of, you know, I got to be on the big, the Jumbotron, the Applebee's Power Play.
Yep.
Or I got to have my, if I'm not on the panel on the side, you know, oh, well, then there's no place for me. But really, you guys are willing to counsel and, yep, and to get in someone's budget. Let me ask this question as well. I really would like to stress that concept of everybody coming in the front door. They will pass by your table. They will see your message. So that is huge.
Yep.
Is it also something that they don't have to do for an entire season? Can people meet you for, hey, I just need to do a very short burst? Is that something that's available?
Yeah, we do that as well, based on, you know, what they're trying to do. And like you said, coming in right through that front door, we do things to help target, you know, specific businesses for specific games. And so, you know, you can do something that, you know, hey, I want to be highlighted on this game and maybe that game. And, you know, we can set that kind of thing up. And, you know, like you said, you can do something small where, hey, maybe you are just located up front and you're one of those tables as people come in. You know, we also have businesses that say, hey, you know, I don't really do much in terms of advertising, because my business doesn't, you know, it's so specialized. I'm selling air controls, like Jim Hall over here. And so, you know, I don't see the need of trying to get in front of fans. But we also have businesses that say, hey, I understand, you know, there are other organizations that aren't necessarily business organizations that are trying to help get their name out, community organizations that are nonprofits that want to be able to come out to the game. And so those type of businesses a lot of times will help support those community organizations, those nonprofits that are trying to get their name out. You know, we have a high demand for some of those, and so they help the cause that they want to be highlighted at our games as well. So there's the aspect of looking at the nonprofit, the charitable aspect of what we do with a lot of the things that we do to help make those charitable activities that we do a success.
You know, folks that may be listening say, okay, you've had Leatherberry Associates on, you've had an IT company, you know, Triatech, Sage, and so forth, and the Gladiators doesn't quite make a fit other than, you know, being, you know, business to business, but really they do. And Tom, I guess, again, as I pull Tom back into the conversation again, is, you know, they sell tickets, they have customers and management. You know, I would think they need a CRM as well. So it all kind of ties in, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. The fact that they've got data, it doesn't matter if they're trying to track individual households or they're trying to track business-to-business sales. I mean, you've got information. You're trying to track that information. So some type of a sales order entry system, some type of a ticket management system, it all makes sense.
We want people to call and us not to go, hold on, let me put you on hold for 25 minutes while I figure out where your tickets are. They want to be able to, you know, log in, look at it, and say, okay, here you are. You're good. You're set. You know, your tickets are in will call. We'll see you on Friday night. Not, hold on. Let me go find a spreadsheet somewhere and let's see if the tickets have been printed and if they're where they need to be.
So I got to go through my sticky notes and find your tickets.
Exactly.
And so that's where the customization capability comes in with, like, for example, the Sage product is you can actually build the ticket management module right into it. So they can actually create a sales opportunity. They can look up the ticket availability right there in their system. They can answer the customer's call in a few minutes as opposed to, you know, let me call you back in 30 minutes.
For all I know, they already may be using Sage products because, as we found out on the show, Sage is everywhere. It's like our big brother.
You know, we had Sage out at one of our games a couple of weeks ago. They were utilizing it as they had a big group night out back in the first half of the season. So,
I mean, they have a big office here in Gwinnett County, absolutely. So a lot of employees, including my cousin. See, you learned something new about me today. Dustin, for those that want to find out more about, becoming a sponsor of the team, and for those that just want to maybe, you know, find out more about tickets, tell us about your website and best way to contact you.
GwinnettGladiators.com is the best way. Log on there, and it's got all the information that you'll need. You can call the office. It's all there on the website.
And your season runs from when to when?
We run from October all the way through April, and then we keep our fingers crossed that we'll be playing till June in the playoffs.
So even though you're already in season, if somebody wants to get on board, absolutely. There's no problem, you know, getting on at a prorated cost.
Yep, absolutely.
And what is the trophy they're going for? What is the
Kelly Cup? Kelly Cup champion.
There you go. Yep. Hopefully we go for the Kelly Cup this year.
Exactly.
Kelly Cup championship. A couple of years ago, they actually were in the finals.
Absolutely.
Traveled to Alaska.
Yes.
That, oh my.
Alaska to play hockey. Who would have guessed
it? And you're in the ECHL, which used to be the East Coast Hockey League, right. But then they started adding Alaska and all that and said, okay, we're just the ECHL.
Yep.
But does it stand for the Eastern Coast Hockey League? It has to stand for something.
No, it stands for nothing now.
It stands for the acronym now.
ECHL.
Yeah. And you're in a room with people that love acronyms, by the way. So, right. Dustin, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. All right, Dustin Bixby from the Gwinnett Gladiators. Also a big thank you to our other guests today, Jim Hall with Triatech, Brandy Melton and Emily Eukers with Sage Sales Logics, and Tom Leatherberry with Leatherberry Associates. You look like you want to say something, Stephen.
No? I'm waiting for you to say it for my co-host.
Oh,
so
okay.
I jumped the gun there.
Hang tight. I'll get right to you. You want to make up for missing last week's show. Hey, a quick reminder that Gwinnett Business Radio can be heard throughout the day on the Gwinnett Business Radio X station, and that you can listen to any of our programs, including this one, anytime 24/7 by logging on to businessradiox.com. Now, here's your cue. For Stephen Julian,
I'm going to spin a pencil to find out where I eat lunch today.
There you go. I'm Mike Salmon. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.